This is David Griffith, editor of Police Magazine. As we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11, police is conducting a series of special podcasts with law enforcement officers who experienced that horrible day in person. My first guest is John Adler. John is not only the former president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, FLEOA, he served as director of the Bureau of Justice Assistance from 2017 to 2019. On 9/11, John was Chief Firearms and Tactical Training Officer for the U.S. Attorney's Office, Southern District of New York. His offices were very near the World Trade Center. In our second discussion with John, we will discuss his experiences in the immediate aftermath of the attack. John, thank you for your time today.
Hey, David. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to participate in this important program.
When you returned to Ground Zero on September 12th, what was your mission?
When we returned to the grounds, we were engaging in, to some extent, evidence recovery, also assisting in what was called the Bucket Brigade, which is working on what we described as the pit, you know, sort of the center of the grounds, in removing as much debris and also looking for human remains so we can identify those who were killed in the heinous attack. We also continued to secure the area. You know, we didn't want anybody obviously wandering in, and it wasn't an easy task securing an area. It wasn't your typical crime scene with a easily defined perimeter. So that was a little bit of a challenge. And then also criminal investigators in my office, myself, assisted with the protective escorts of the U.S. attorney and other officials, transporting them to various locations.
What kinds of evidence were you able to recover at the site?
We ultimately recovered several pieces of the planes. One piece of evidence or potential evidence of interest, a firefighter brought over to me what looked like an improvised edge weapon, otherwise known as a shiv or a shank. And it appeared to have dried up the color of what we would describe as dried up blood. And the blade itself was very thin. And he didn't know for sure if it was anything. I appreciated the fact he brought it to me. We ultimately took it back and tested it. We ran it through the magnetometer. And oddly enough, it didn't set off the magnetometer at regular screening strength level. We ultimately brought it to the evidence recovery specialist at the FBI, but there was no sort of follow-up information shared in terms of whether the red-orange color on the blade was in fact blood, and it could have been possibly used by one of the terrorists.
But it could have equally been something that was on the plane or somebody's pocket or anything, right?
Yes and no. The thing that kind of set off our police barometer, if you will, was it looked, as I said, it looked like a shank. You know, it wasn't silverware from a restaurant. It was something that was made. It was the handle, the grip was taped up. The blade itself was extremely thin. David, you might remember those old soda cans where we had to peel off the top to open them. It was that, the blade was that thin. So there was just something that it did not equate to a Boy Scout knife or a Swiss Army knife or something that a person would normally carry or you'd find in a restaurant.
What was your continuing role at the World Trade Center site as the days went on?
It was a matter of, again, security, evidence, recovery. You know, again, you always hang on to faith that there could be the possibility of a rescue of someone trapped beneath all the girders and the debris. Also, I attempted to film the crime scene the day after. And, you know, the reason in part was, at least from the prosecutor perspective, we wanted to capture the totality of the damage on video, just anticipating down the road there might be a hearing which would become relevant to assess the level of damage by way of comprehensive video, certainly showing victim impact and destruction of property. And I got to tell you, David, you know, I was using an old VHS recorder, and it was very difficult You know, I had previously mentioned it's not as though you had a clear path to walk around in terms of defining a crime scene. And walking from any one point to another involved climbing over things. Blocks were just, you were unable to walk down any particular block. So you may have had, I may had a detour around obstacles. So in any event, I think my video looks somewhat like the old movie, The Blair Witch, where everything was sort of shaking. It wasn't what I would call my best work or quality product, but there was a need again to capture the damage. And in retrospect, I think it was probably best accomplished from aerial video in addition to the walkthrough, which I tried to accomplish.
Well, the crime scene was massive, right? And we're talking several blocks, more than several blocks.
Yeah, there were several blocks. And just think about it, David. Two buildings, 100 floors tall, come down. You know, the World Trade came down. 5 and 6 were blown out. And other surrounding buildings were blown out. The amount of, you know, I hate to use debris because it just doesn't sound hazardous enough to call it debris. But just the girders, the remains of the foundation of the buildings, just landing in the surrounding streets. So there was no pathway to walk through or travel through. And you just had to negotiate your way and try and establish fixed points so you have some sense of, you know, the beginning and how you move around this tremendous crime scene. It was, very difficult to define in a traditional sense.
How long did you keep returning down there?
We went back and forth down to the grounds for, let's see, at least 2 months. And, you know, David, what started off as a frantic effort to save lives, to secure the area, to secure evidence, ultimately sort of graduated into going down to the grounds and just praying there for the loss of our friends and our partners and teammates. And it's so we're somehow compelled to continue going down there to try and find additional remains so we could at least help to bring some form, I know the word closure is used, it's not closure, but resolution in terms of what happened to missing loved ones. And we just remained determined to engage in that challenging task, but to at least assist and help the poor families who were suffering and not knowing what happened to their loved ones who were still missing.
The amount of time you spent at the scene, the amount of toxins you were exposed to on the day of the attack, have you personally experienced any health issues from your exposure?
David, I get asked that question often, and I try my best to be fair and separate anything I might experience health-wise that was either pre-existing or something that is my responsibility. But the one thing, and I say that because I'm very sensitive to people suggesting that we were looking for a handout, which we're not. But the one thing that resonated with me, and especially as a tactical instructor, I had two different nosebleeds after, subsequent to 9/11, and without getting punched or kicked in the face. And I'm not a nosebleeder by nature. I don't have medical issues that would lend itself towards a nosebleed. And, you know, one of the things I remember during and in the days after 9/11 was the lining of my nostrils felt like they were just burned or scorched. And I felt I had to constantly massage the outside of my nose. So there is concern there that I'm monitoring in terms of any respiratory damage. But the other part to your question, David, which may not be readily obvious to everyone, is the prospect of psychological injury and psychological damage. And I grew up in the old school mindset of suck it up, cupcake. And after 9/11, unfortunately, many of us are choking on that proverbial cupcake. You know, it's important we believe smash stigma save lives. We want to make sure that all of our brother and sister first responders do engage with mental health experts to ensure that they can have an opportunity to increase or build upon their wellness and not let the darkness of that day consume them.
John will talk about his time as the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association and his work on behalf of 9/11 first responders in our final discussion.